Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks, what the fuckadelics, what the fuckettes? How's it going? Are you all right? How's it being sequestered by self, quarantined, nothing to do, locked down? How's it going? Are you all right? I don't know. It got pretty scary pretty quick out here in California. I don't know where you are. Of course, we're a little late to the game in this country, but, you know, leave it to Americans. It takes a while for them to kind of negotiate. The negotiation between lizard brain and the ego can be kind of rough going. You know, you get the information, and lizard brain wants to react properly and take the constructive measures to protect oneself. But then, depending where your ego lies, maybe you still want to go to that concert, or you still want to go to that restaurant, you still want to go to that bar, or you still want to believe that it's not real or that it couldn't happen to you. Ego, I'll tell you, man, that conflict between ego and lizard brain is going to be the end of us. And I'm being fairly diplomatic about it. I mean, I'm the same way. I mean, come on. Our guest today is Tandy Newton from Westworld, and she was in the movie Crash. She's a very lovely person. The new season of Westworld is on HBO Sunday nights and on HBO streaming platforms, but a lovely person. And I was thrilled to talk to her. But I do want to let you guys know, we did the interview shortly before the, it was sort of at the beginning of it, of the lockdown out here. I do want to tell you, as always, despite whatever we go through, given this is one of the few places where people can still connect and listen and take their minds off it, or at least listen to other human beings being human, we're going to keep at it. We're not going to let you down. We will be here for you, going through it with you as this unfolds. But we're going to be here the same as always, twice a week, to give you what you need. It's definitely scary, and I think it's weird for me because I'm an anxious person that's full of dread anyways. But generally, my dread does not the world's going to end dread or that I'm going to get sick dread, really. It's really day-to-day dread. But I've run the gamut of complete existential paralysis and anxiety. I used to be just paralyzed by hypochondria. I used to be completely immersed in the type of dread of I was going to die, we were all going to die. But that's lessened, but my grooves are grooved. My neurochannels, my neural canals, my neural pathways are cut with the sharp edge of anxiety, all the way back from my front lobes to the back, all the way from the ego to the lizard brain. I've got well-articulated neural pathways that I can climb into anytime I want, well-traveled. So with all this going down, there's something about the chaos and the panic and the impending doom of it all that is sort of, I feel okay. I feel like, all right, so now we all kind of understand, you know, what carved me out of the fucking clay to be who I am, and then we're all on the same page. Obviously, that's not true. Some people are worse off. But in terms of panic, there's something about things being a little chaotic and out of control and scary is when I get calm and I get clarity and I get relaxed and I get grounded. The belligerence of the people that insist on living their lives is an inability to think altruistically. It's a fairly selfish, childish mode of thinking that the right engages in most of the time, but some of us are guilty of it as well. The sort of like, yeah, it's not that bad. I bet, you know, no, you don't die of it. Old people die. I'm not going to get, no, it's the spread, man. It's the spread. And, you know, quite honestly, they don't know. They don't know how it's going to affect people. They don't know how it's going to mutate. It's killing some younger folks in some places. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, the hope is that it don't get that bad. And that somehow the precautions we're taking on a state-by-state level by responsible state representatives as opposed to leadership at the top, it may work. It may hold it back. And if it does, then the belligerent will, you know, cry foul and say, I told you, and you guys overreacted. It was all an assault on our freedom. So that's in the best-case scenario. If thousands and thousands and thousands don't get sick and thousands and thousands and thousands and don't die, those of us who were careful and reacted properly will be called the enemy for overreacting. But I guess that's a small price to pay if our fucking economic system and medical system and community systems hold up. Right? Right. What a time to be alive. You know, I was too slow on the toilet paper, but thankfully I had a dozen or so rolls, and it's only me, and now, you know, Lynn's here too, because her production got shut down in Boston, so she flew back. Glow is put on hold. Everything's on hold. The Comedy Store is closed. This is where we're at. We don't know how long it's going to go on for. I don't know, man. I don't know. And, you know, if you're a compulsive eater, the risk is you're going to go through your 2 weeks of food in a couple of days. We'll see what happens this week, you know. I'll check in with the groceries. That's a weird thing. I compulsively go to grocery stores for one or two things when I need them because they're close. Not anymore. Not only, even if they're little, like I need some dry mustard and some peppercorns to pickle some beets. But I don't know what's going to happen. I just hope people are doing the sort of distancing trip just for everybody's sake. We don't know what's going to happen. Might as well take the precautions that are recommended by the people that know, as opposed to calling them hacks or frauds or cucks. Let's listen to the scientists on this one. We've never been through a pandemic. Why not take the information from the people that understand this stuff because they studied it their whole fucking life, as opposed to you, probably not listening to this show, who thinks they know everything just because. Because they don't want to change. They don't want to listen. They don't want to be inconvenienced. I fucking do what I want. I'm a child. So, a lot of nice responses to the special. And I appreciate it. A lot of people on Twitter, a lot of emails coming in. I appreciate it. I couldn't have timed it better. I didn't time it like this. I had nothing to do with it. Tragic serendipity brought my special End Times Fun to the public on the weekend that seems like the end is upon us. And I'm glad it's providing some relief. But I had nothing. There was no way I could calculate that. And I had nothing to do with the creation of the coronavirus. Yeah, the entire global tragedy was not some sort of, you know, false flag for me to promote my special. Sorry, I wish it was. I wish it wasn't real. But it is real. It is real. So let's read an email. You got me fired and it changed my life. This is something I could not have anticipated. Usually I get the life-changing emails because of the podcast. Hey, Mark. Just wanted to share a quick story. It was maybe 1995. I'd finished college in Indiana with no future, moved to Albuquerque on a whim, and got a job at mailboxes, etc., by the university. You came in one morning to send some package. I recognized you from Comedy Channel, and to my everlasting embarrassment, was a bit starstruck. Evidently, I undercharged you or overcharged you. Regardless, it got back to the boss, and she fired me. Having nothing else to do then, I answered an ad in the back of a magazine and wound up teaching English in Korea for the next 2 years, came back to the States, enlisted in the Army for 4 years, and now I'm a public librarian in Wisconsin. Just wanted to say thanks for getting me fired. It changed my life. Anyway, appreciate what you do and wanted you to know that your honesty about addiction and related troubles, though masked in comedy, makes a sincere difference in a whole lot of lives, mine included. Stay strong and hoo-ha, Chris. Thanks, buddy. Glad to help out. Glad to have gotten you fired. Glad to help out. Yeah. Okay, what else we got? Ireland. Hello, Mark. Just listened to your interview with Don Gavin in which the Irishman needed your convincing to visit Ireland. I love that the country left such a large impression on you. Who doesn't love soft rain? I'm of Irish heritage, originally from North Jersey / New York. Over the years, I connected deeply with many a Russian Jew or Eastern European cohort because of how we overlapped in humor and casual despair. Joyce and Tolstoy were doing their thing pretty much at the same time. And a quick word about Boston, aka the last bastion of old school American masculinity. There exists a double helix of fighty toughness and epigenetic pain, which forms pure cinematic poetry. Manchester by the Sea is the most recent example. I agree with your observation about Irish men being so much sweeter than Irish American men. My theory, Irish American men have had their Donegal beaten out of them, emasculated, particularly in Boston, by the gentry who oppressed them for 800 years back in the motherland. I can't imagine it was easy for you either, making the rounds in New England as a young comic. My parents are slowly dying on Cape Cod, and every time I visit, I'm struck by the deep suspicion New Englanders have of anyone who doesn't subscribe to that cloistered Catholic pathos. Best, Barbara. And you, Barbara, are a poet. Thank you for that, Barbara. I appreciate that. This one is, oh boy. All right. Honeymoon pandemic. Dig it. Already. I'm in. I like the title. Should be a movie. Hi, Mark. I hope this email finds you well. My wife and I, both Americans, were/are honeymooning in Spain this past week, if you want to call it that. Mostly, we were just walking around increasingly deserted streets in ancient and beautiful locales, looking for restaurants that might welcome us, and clandestinely applying Purell after repeated hand washings. What I will say is that we argued a lot, and being the more well-traveled in our team, I tried to assure my beloved, in chronological order, that one, the trip was a good idea, two, we weren't going to have to change it while we were here, three, we can just cut the trip short a bit, four, they're going to let us back in the country, five, home quarantine might be creatively productive for us. Huh. It was a crash course in marriage 101. In a possible crisis situation, a woman's intuition should not be diminished or ignored. Once I admitted my shortcomings, the tension eased, and we hunkered down last night where we were the only guests to watch End Times Fun. And I will say, we laughed our asses off. The special was everything we love about you, and it truly helped ease tension we have over our current travel situation and the symbolism of our trip, which we have dubbed Honey Pandemic. Anyway, just wanted to say thanks for bringing us together and providing some much-needed perspective and levity in a strange time. Much love, Keith and Lauren. Now, this came in on, I guess, Saturday night. I bet you they're stuck there. This is going to be a real test. Keith, Lauren, I hope your marriage survives your honeymoon. You know? Oh, man. So, Tandy Newton is a real fan of this show. And it was, I didn't know that thoroughly until she came. And we had a lovely conversation. And she was great. I felt like we could have talked for a long time. And she, Tandy Newton, sent me flowers a couple of days after we had the talk to say what a nice time she had and that it was a great experience for her. Sent me flowers. She sent me a beautiful bouquet of flowers. Lovely. And this is me talking to Tandy Newton about a lot of stuff. She is in the new season of Westworld. She's been in there since the beginning. And the new season is on HBO Sunday nights and on HBO streaming platforms. And we talked about a lot of stuff. This is me and Tandy Newton. There are shows where people sort of sit down with showrunners and they get like a seasonal arc. Like, what am I doing? Where am I going to be? What's happening? Not your experience.
They like to keep things from us.
Why?
Because...
You agree with that logic?
I trust them.
Uh-huh.
I trust them.
Yeah.
Because I like them
uh-huh.
as people.
Yeah.
I don't trust anybody
Everybody.
Else.
You trust the Westworld people.
I trust those two people.
Yeah.
Our showrunners.
Do you want to wear cans on your head?
Do people like to? You're doing it, so I'm going to do it.
I do it because
Ooh,
I can hear
I can
myself,
really,
and you can
really
hear yourself.
I can hear myself slurp.
Oh, nice. That is going to drive some people crazy. There are certain people in the world that cannot take that.
Can't take it.
I like it, though.
Yeah.
All right, so, but that script, that week-to-week thing, so you get the script for Westworld like a week before?
Oh, yeah.
That's it?
That's it.
That's
it.
See, I think that's why I find it, or I have found it unsatisfying to act on television, because that means, like, even if you have just a few scenes, you've got a week to kind of put those scenes together, only focus on those scenes, kind of lock into your trip, but it's not enough to live in it. You know what I mean? You're like visiting it.
Yeah, except you don't know in life what you're going to be doing from one week to the next. So.
I don't know what's going to happen in 5 minutes.
Exactly. After I've drunk this coffee.
I know.
You really don't know.
I have no idea where this is going to go.
I don't mind.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of why they keep things from us sometimes.
Well, I
think they don't want us to share information with each other, whether they don't, maybe they don't want to have to be tied
right.
to something.
Yeah.
I think that might be a thing. Like, you don't want an actor being disappointed with what's coming up.
Because it's not fully done yet, or they still got other revisions and shit.
Yeah,
I think it's mostly because they don't trust anybody not to dump the story out into the world.
Maybe that's right. I don't really know. And it's just not that important to me to find out. Like, if we were in a pattern where, you know, I found out I was going to, you know, like, kill a child and, you know, maim an old lady. It's like, you know what? I don't want it. It doesn't give you time to say no.
To say no. Oh, okay.
I don't want to do that.
Right. Okay. Well, there's right. Well, you would think they would ask you.
But you know. But actually,
it's only in Westworld where those two things could possibly.
No. That well, for me, when
as
I,
long as they're robots, it doesn't
when
matter.
I find,
right?
Oh God. When I find out new stuff, it's always great, and I'm.
Yeah.
I like it.
I didn't know that
that
I almost tried to have sex with my daughter until the week before.
What?
That last the last scene of the second season, I think, of Glow, where Justine reveals that she's my daughter that I didn't know I had.
That's pretty fucked up.
It was pretty intense.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, it didn't go that far.
No.
But it was kind of jarring. But I didn't know that was going to happen until like the week before.
So, and you as a character didn't know either. So
exactly.
That's
I guess that's
quite good.
I understand that. But
maybe we're coming around to it.
Maybe.
Right now.
I guess. But I guess as an actor who's trying to learn how to act, who doesn't consider himself to be, you know, that great at it yet.
You're very good at it.
Well, thank you.
Silly man.
But to put more work into getting to sort of really feel, like, I think, like, if they told me what's going to happen this whole season, that to know where I'm going to go, it would kind of give me some sort of broader
I do know what you mean. I do know what you mean. Like, for example, Ken Loach, great director Ken Loach, he often doesn't tell the actors what's coming up next.
The British guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And very often they're non-actors.
Right.
So they respond as, you know, as you would completely.
Sure,
and
right.
that's, I don't know how I feel about, I think Ken Loach is a genius. His films are amazing. But if you're an actor doing it for a living, you don't want that. Because you want to prepare.
I guess for me, because I've spent so much of my life not preparing and winging it, like most of what I do, stand up and stuff, all starts that way. And this, what we're doing right now, that, you know, the idea that, like, I'd like to try to make some real choices, man.
Yeah.
So give me some, like, I want to spend some time with the choices.
Mind you, you do have a week, and I bet what, you do in a week is is pretty good.
But then I talk to people like Sam Rockwell, like, I talk to Rockwell, and he's like, you know, when I'm going to do a movie, I read the script, the whole script, 100 times. I'm like, holy shit.
That's
fucking crazy.
Excessive.
I guess so.
But that's what he needs to do.
And he's good.
He's really
good.
And
I don't know what I need to do.
No.
What do you need to do?
You have to figure it out.
I'm trying to.
I think you're doing quite a good job.
Well, thank you.
I mean, it depends. After Glow, do you want to go and do other stuff?
Well, I've been doing some movies here and there. Mm. I played Jerry Wexler in the Aretha Franklin movie.
You did?
With Jennifer Hudson. I hear I did good. I never think I did good.
But you did that beautiful thing.
Easy?
You did with the Modern Love.
Yeah, with
Melanie Linsky.
Melanie Linsky, yeah.
Oh,
easy.
Shit. Great.
That was heavy. I get choked up when you bring it up.
Oh,
that was.
She's amazing.
She's great. And we had her for one day, man. Oh. So that cafe scene, that had to fucking go, man.
Yeah, and it did.
Yeah.
And you did great.
We were in it, wide open.
Yes,
sir. Oof. You live here?
No, I live in London.
So what? Oh, you're just here doing press?
Yeah, but I'm in the middle of shooting a movie in Montana right now.
Montana's pretty. Are you enjoying it out there?
Yeah.
What kind of movie are you shooting in Montana?
Oh, God, it's so fucking good.
Yeah? Who's directing that?
It's the first time. It's his first feature. Mm. He's award-winning short movies. Mm-hmm. A real student of cinema.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Independent
film? Done it. Small movie?
Yeah,
big
small
movie.
Mm. Very small.
Yeah.
And it was I just finished Westworld and another movie back to back, and I really needed to go home and just do nothing. And I read the script and talked to him, but I said no, because I just thought this is so good. Richie, I thought this is so good that someone else is it's still gonna be great.
Yeah,
because the material's so good.
Yeah.
And so I didn't feel like, oh, they need me.
Oh, right.
And then I couldn't stop thinking about it for 2 weeks. I haven't had that experience for years.
How does Montana factor into it?
It's set in Montana. She's a black woman in the snow with a dog and a gun.
Really?
It's like they call it a neo-Western. And it's, how is Montana? I hate the snow.
Mm.
I mean, I really do.
You find no beauty in it.
It looks beautiful, but, you know, underneath there's poo. There's okay. I just see I know what's under there.
What's frozen under there?
Or not even frozen necessarily.
Just sitting there.
Just there.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Oh, sure. All kinds of filth.
Filth. And it's fucking freezing.
Yeah.
And I don't like being cold.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there is so much going against this thing.
But it sounds like one of those kind of, like, you know, it's a character study. You're the movie, correct?
Yes.
Right.
And it's dealing with issues around just judging people at face value, hate crimes, racism, subtle themes which are so present in our culture right now.
Oh, fuck.
You know,
what are we going to do?
And this is why I need to do this film.
Yeah, right.
You know, because I just feel like it really, 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 it articulates the dilemma really well.
Yeah,
and helps you to see just the suicidal tendencies of humanity, and how we're not willing to experience each other and face up to ourselves and just fear of the other. And
sure, but also like that, like, you know, I start to realize recently that there's this weird cocoon of entitlement and constantly,
which is fear.
Entitlement
is fear.
But also this idea that, you know, that your perception or what you think somebody is what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens almost innately.
Instantly, yeah.
And I think we all do it to a degree. You know, like, I'm not talking about race, but like just with anybody. I wrote this line. I said, most of who other people are is something we make up.
Oh, yeah, what we project.
Right.
Of course it is. And it's very useful.
Yeah.
If you think of yourself in a little tribe and you know, having to fend for everything, all your resources, protection, everything.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to judge at face value. You need to make quick decisions.
Well, are you talking about, are we dealing with wild animals?
Wild animals. Okay. You know, like...
But people are so much more complex.
Yes, but we've still got these lizard brains.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, we're... Sure. And I don't think that we truly understand... You know, our kind of archaic impulses,
right?
And they are
sometimes
archaic.
I don't feel like I know anybody, even people that I think I know, even the people I should know.
Isn't that great, though?
It is great,
but it means you have to keep exploring. You can never assume,
right? But you're probably going to find something in there that's disappointing and aggravating.
Like, yes.
That moment where you're like, oh, you're one of those people?
Yeah.
God damn it.
Well, that's my theory about falling in love.
Oh,
which
good.
Is, you know, that love at first sight thing. Mm. Is that you project, like, obviously it's got to be a physical, you know, that person, there's a chemistry that goes
sure.
on. And then you project
yeah.
everything that you hope
yeah.
that person
yeah.
couldn't all, could all, be.
Everything that didn't come together for you as a child.
Everything's there.
Needs to, they're, everything's got to resolve.
They've
itself.
Got the whole picture. Yeah. That first few mm-hmm. moments is wicked.
Mm-hmm.
And then as time goes on,
yeah, just,
you're going through the checklist mm-hmm. and either it matches up to what you hoped or maybe yeah. like 50-50 is pretty cool.
I guess
you know?
So. I guess I hear you have to compromise. So
yes.
That's
yeah,
my
you
understanding.
Have to, darling, you have to grow.
I guess what
you
I hear.
You have to grow.
You have to take the hit.
You do. Yeah, that's right. Right. So much learning. So much learning.
So, but I mean, how many times have you had that experience? You've been married a while, right?
21 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it happened once and the box, you just ticks them all.
Wow. 21 years of ticking boxes?
Okay.
Okay,
in retrospect, even the boxes that I fucking would have kicked him out, I realized were the most important boxes of all.
Oh, that you dealt with that?
Yeah. The most important boxes of all. The things that I feared most, the things that I desperately didn't want. And through no fault of his own necessarily, but in growing past those things.
So you're able, they presented themselves and you were able to work through them
yeah.
together.
Yeah, not resist.
Huh.
Not resist.
Yeah.
Because he's a really, really good person.
That's good. Are you?
I think I am.
Good.
I think so. I love a lot.
Good.
I do.
Yeah.
I know I'm kind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
I know I'm difficult.
Self-awareness is so important, isn't it?
Yeah, but I try to do the right thing. You know, I'm cranky about doing the right thing, but I do it.
Oh, really?
No, I mean, like, a lot of times...
You're honest.
Yeah. I don't think that I'm emotionally as open or as unafraid as I should be in a personal relationship. But I try to compensate by, you know, knowing I need to do good things.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all. And then when it happens, when I'm open and stuff, it's like, it's happening. Let's enjoy it while it's happening.
Yeah.
Now it's going away.
But... Yeah. Trust is hard, isn't it?
Ugh.
It's really, really hard.
I think I don't even think about it anymore as much as I just go, like, is it even necessary? I guess it is.
To trust.
I don't always know what I want out of a thing. Yeah,
no,
trust
but
is important.
You can't know. You can't. Mm. You just got to rely on, like, you're in a relationship and something happened, a spark.
Yeah.
And then you just go, and you go along and...
I had no choice.
You had no choice. Oh, really? It was one of those.
Like, I was like, if I don't do this, I'm going to be mad.
Oh, really?
I'm going to regret it.
Oh, my God.
I was with somebody else.
Okay.
And it was sort of like, I gotta.
That's... I mean, at least the decision was kind of made for you.
It's heavy.
In some ways, you know?
Well, you know, also, like, I'm a child, you know, like, I have no children, and there's no reason for me to be in anything I'm not comfortable in, so...
And life is... This is it.
It is it.
Like, you're going to stay in a situation unnecessarily that is ultimately lying to the other person?
Yeah, I don't owe anyone my life.
I think that's... I mean, I'm... Yeah, of course it's hard, but it's the right thing to do.
Did your parents... Are they married? Are they alive?
They're alive and married.
So they stuck in it. What?
Yeah.
You got good modeling on that?
Yeah. They're so sweet, man. It's like it gets to a point. And I feel somewhat, I can see it around the corner where you just accept shit, man.
You have to, man. You get too old to keep. You got to put the shield down. Got to put the sword down on some level.
You got to, and just accept that it's just not the way you thought it might be.
And also, it's okay.
It would be. It is okay.
And a lot of the shit we were all worked up about doesn't fucking matter.
It doesn't matter, babe. Isn't that great?
In the big picture, it doesn't matter.
It fucking matters.
I would just like to live my life without being put in a camp of some kind, if that's possible.
Ooh.
Sorry, did I buzzkill?
No. I was just immediately thinking, what would we do? What would we do?
What would we do? We'd be like, well, so who's got some good camp jokes?
Yeah.
Where were you born?
I was born in London on a very brief trip back to London. We were living in Zambia, my
so,
family.
Like, explain, see, now I don't know that I've ever, well, you know, I may have talked to one other person.
From Zambia?
Not from Zambia, but who has roots in the Yolo. How do you say his name? Yolo.
David Oyelowo.
Ah.
Oh, thank Christ.
Yes.
David Oyelowo.
Yes.
David Oyelowo. Now, we made a movie together. He's lovely.
But where's, I can't remember, we've talked about it. Where are his roots? Doesn't he come
from Nigeria?
So he's Nigeria. But he comes from royalty too.
Does he?
I think he does. Don't you?
I do. My mom was a princess. She is a princess.
Still a princess.
Well, she is, yeah, according to Zimbabwean African lineages.
Now, how did your family get here?
So my mom is from Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
And she went to London. Oh, man, sweet mama. Her whole family, her whole town saved up because she was the youngest of, like, 8 children, but was a little firecracker.
Uh-huh.
And everyone pitched in for a one-way ticket to England when she was
just her
20s. Oh, yeah. 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 They didn't, there wasn't a lot.
And
you
the
know?
King let her go?
Her dad was no longer alive. Okay. But let me explain about the royal lineages there. Because it's not like one king for the whole of Zimbabwe. Because,
right.
You know, back in the day, there were, you know, small villages, and each village, each town had a royal family,
like a clan situation.
Yeah, so it's like, in a way, it's now like the mayor.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
They would call
Got
them kings it. And queens, but it was like mm-hmm. the mayor. So she came to England to train to be a nurse. She got her qualifications, went straight back because that's the point.
That is noble shit, man.
Oh God, and the experience she had in England was interesting, as you can imagine.
Mm.
Just a lot of racism, mm-hmm. a lot of. But then went back to Zambia where she had a job in the hospital, and my dad was there. He was training in the laboratory. He was interested in music back in England. He's from a tiny town on the coast of England. He'd never travelled anywhere further than London.
Uh-huh.
And back in those days, Africa was encouraging people from England, America to come and bring their skills. So there was no like red tape anywhere, immigration,
right.
that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So he was there. And the reason he went to Africa is because he wanted to go to where the roots of the blues came from, because he loved blues.
Really?
And he knew it wasn't America. He knew those syncopated beats were Africa.
But were they from that part of Africa?
I think it was probably...
Senegal, maybe?
I think, yeah, it was probably more west, but he wanted to go to Africa because he wanted to go to the roots of blues.
That's so wild.
So he just got the map, closed his eyes, put his finger, it was Zambia, and there he was. Uh-huh. So I am a fluke, man.
That's great.
Big old fluke.
Did he find the roots of the blues? Your old man?
Yeah, my mum, she had a black eye. Uh-huh. He fell in love with her at the party where she had this big afro and one dodgy eye, and that was the end of it.
Oh, that's a sweet story. And then they both go back to England?
Yeah.
Huh.
They were only supposed to go back for a short while, but his dad was unwell, so they ended up sticking around.
So he comes from there. Like, where did he come from?
Cornwall.
Oh, okay, so he grew up there.
And, you know, they came from completely different worlds, cultures, environments. Mm. So no wonder it's tricky.
Of course,
to be the child of these two people. There is no place.
Tricky for them culturally.
For me.
Right, but not with them.
No, not with them.
Right.
It makes perfect sense with them.
No, but I mean, you're okay with them.
Oh my God, yeah, I'm really good with them.
Right, but the judgment that comes down.
It was hard.
I can't imagine.
It was so fucking hard. My mum struggled hard to keep my brother and I protected from just the ignorance and cynicism
of
people.
Did you feel it when you were younger?
In retrospect, yeah. But I didn't have an explanation for why people didn't want to be my friend. I didn't have an explanation for why.
Because you're a kid.
Well, I mean, I guess mom could have explained it, but it wasn't, that's not what you did in those days.
So you mean you always just felt, as you got older, that you just felt weird?
I was just not attractive. I was, even, no matter how hard I tried, I wasn't a favorite, ever. I was always passed over.
You mean in school?
In school, always in trouble. Oh my God, for doing fuck all. It was like, well, it was a Catholic nuns.
You went to a Catholic
school? It was the best school in the town.
That was the idea. Whose idea was that?
Well, it was the best school, the best education. And I remember, I don't remember this actually, but I feel like I do.
When you've been told.
5 years old, and mum took me to the gates where Miss Wilmington, who wasn't a nun, the only nun, the only one who wasn't a nun, met us at the gate. And she said to my mum, we're all very excited because we've never had one before.
Oh, wow.
So mum had to put my hand in her hand and walk away. And that...
You were the one.
That's the price she had to pay for my education. But for mum, that was... My mum had to leave home at 5 years old to go and get an education.
She had your interest at heart.
Oh, without a doubt.
But did not quite fathom the hardships you might have...
Yeah.
Encounters.
Yeah, but you know, she had managed, so I guess.
But like,
I
that's
would.
Every day, you know, wearing a uniform and being the only black kid in the whole school.
Babe, she braided my hair in this pretty style for the school photo, and I was sent home.
What?
You know, because it was too ghetto. Like, it was inappropriate.
Wow.
I felt so ashamed.
Oh, and
the added thing is that I felt so embarrassed for her.
Yeah.
And I almost didn't want to be the thing that goes home and goes, you did wrong, mum. You know what I mean?
It's like, of course, well, that's because we, right, it's our fault.
I felt so awful. Like, it was it was that constantly.
That's so complicated because, like, no matter, so your mom wasn't really explaining things to you.
No, because she didn't take the high ground. Because we were the imposters in a way. And
she felt that way too. So this was almost...
Well, I can't say that. I mean, I can't speak for her. But at that time, because there were so few people of color, she couldn't stand up and go, hey, all of you, you've all got it wrong. We deserve to be here. Like, it was still like we had to prove ourselves worthy of being there in a way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I was a good girl, but I couldn't help myself. I was also very naughty. You know, I just was spirited and just used to like making people laugh nonstop. I see it in my kids and it is glorious, but with me it was like the worst thing ever.
So on top of being the other and the only one, you're causing shit.
Causing shit, just, you know, just funny and bright.
Did people like you?
I think the ones that did were the rebels. The ones who didn't mind other people going, you're friends with her?
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, there were so many fucked up things, but my God, I feel like I've been kind of, you know, the blacksmith really worked on my soul, you know?
Yeah.
Bashed it, put it in the flames, bashed it again, and I am sharp now.
Right.
I am fucking sharp. What
came at you at that point? I mean, like, you know, was it violent? Was it hostile? I mean, like, or was it just sort of kid shit?
Kid shit. I guess the most significant one, I was 12, 13, and I'd become friends with a girl who was the most popular girl in the school. By this point, by the way, I've gone to a boarding school because I was really,
good
really...
political move.
Good
instinctual.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
The most popular girl in the school. But I'll tell you why. Because, so I was really talented, started dancing, which was great because I could really let rip then.
Yeah.
And no one was going to tell me off. So I went to this dance school from the age of like 3 years old. And I just kept, I was doing really good. Mm. And almost to sort of get rid of me, she's like, I think that she should audition for a proper dancing school.
Oh, wow.
So that was up in London, which was hours away from where we were. And I got two scholarships
great.
My parents didn't have any dosh, but there I was.
Going to the big city.
Going to the big city. So I got there and, of course, no friends. Only black kid. But
the
I was
only
used
black
to that.
Kid again?
Yeah.
What year was this?
This is, frick.
You don't have to if you don't want to.
I mean, 80s, early 80s.
How is that possible?
82, 83. Because you had to have money, man, to go to this school.
Oh,
but I had two scholarships.
Got it.
I had two grants to go. Anyway, and there was a girl who was the most popular girl in the school. This is in the first time that I was there. Oh. Her dad was Roger Whittaker. Do you remember Roger Whittaker?
I'd like to.
The whistling guy.
Oh.
Speed, Bonnie Bow, like a bird on the wing. No,
is
anyway.
He's a British
pop star? He was a Kenyan, white Kenyan.
Oh.
Huge in the 70s and 80s. Okay. Huge in Canada and Germany.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Jessica had it all.
Yeah.
The mansion in the
sure.
countryside, mm. everything.
It's pretty there, huh?
And, yeah. And over one school holiday, all the girls in our year decided to send Jessica to Coventry, which is where you don't talk to her. I mean, girls are brutal, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And because I wasn't part of the, no one talked to me, really.
You weren't the clique.
No, I was on the outside.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing about this, that they were going to do this to her when she got back to school because she was coming back a couple of days late.
Why were they on her?
Because she was too big for her boots. Because
oh.
she was just too gorgeous,
yeah.
too fabulous,
right,
had
yeah.
everything.
Right.
So collectively, they decided to just bring her down.
Yeah.
So she came back to the school. I remember it. She walked across the room and all the girls just turned away.
Mm.
And she just sashayed out. I swear to God, she sashayed out and just said, well, I don't give a fuck anyway.
Mm.
But I found her later crying in the toilet.
Of course.
In the thing.
Yeah.
And she had never even looked at me, seen me, didn't give, just barely noticed me.
Yeah.
And I just said to her, look, these people are crap. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And so from being the one that she would never have spoken to,
yeah.
she and I became the best friends,
and that
sisters
it helped?
From then on. Oh, she is my sister.
Today?
Yeah. And I was the most unpopular. She was the most popular. And because we were both ostracized, we came together and it is alchemy, magic.
That's so nice that it stayed.
Yeah.
Because that could easily be one of those stories where once the other girl started liking her again. See ya. What's your name again?
No, because she loved me. And they were full of shit. And so her dad had this big party. This is back to the 13-year-old
yeah.
thing. Her dad had this big party. And Jessica was also very, very popular with the boys because she was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And she kind of looked older than she was and
right.
all that shit.
Yeah.
And so her dad was going to have this huge marquee party in the holidays.
Guy?
Hey?
The whistler guy?
The whistling guy,
okay.
yeah. To mark 50 years of his life and 25 years in the business.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to, I got to go. I was
yeah.
going to go.
Yeah.
And there were going to be like 5 boys and 5 girls that were allowed to go to this adult party.
Yeah.
And so she hooked me up with her boyfriend's best mate in this other boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
And we wrote to each other, me and this boy, for maybe a month or two. And I was a good little writer.
Yeah.
Because I was a smart girl.
Yeah.
And I imagined how I could be confident, but even though I wasn't,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So we turned up at this party we'd never met,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't talk to me. And we'd had this wonderful exchange of letters. It was on, man. He didn't talk to
story.
Me. And then that was during the day. And then there were another couple of like little teas and everyone going out to play tennis. And he wouldn't look at me, wouldn't talk to me. And I just gave up and thought, oh, okay, well, obviously he doesn't like me. Although I will say that I got so fucking drunk. I was so upset by the end of the night because all the girls had hooked up with all the boys, including the one boy that hadn't hooked up with one of the girls who'd already hooked up with someone else rather
wow.
than be with me. So it was the worst time. It was the worst thing that could ever happen. And I thought it was because I just was not attractive because
yeah.
I'd always been unattractive
right.
all through my life.
Right.
Also, I thought.
Right.
So months later, maybe years later, because Jessica was too ashamed to tell me
yeah.
that she had found him at the party and said, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You and Tandy.
Yeah.
And he said to her, you didn't tell me she was black.
Uh-huh.
And what was great, Mark, was as soon as she told me that, I was like, oh, he's a dick.
Oh, right. Yeah, I suppose there's something wrong with me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so it's been an issue. It was an issue all through my childhood, just not knowing why and having to make the assumption was always, because racism wasn't clear to me. It hadn't been explained to me.
That's odd. Did you?
I didn't know what it was. I honestly didn't know. It wasn't
until...
No,
I get it, but it is sort of like in the hands of your parents, right, on some level.
Yes.
I mean,
but maybe they thought it was obvious. My mum's black. I'm looking at her. There she is. But I just see she's my mum. She's beautiful. I don't look at her and think she's black. I literally didn't. She didn't look any different to anyone else to me.
I guess maybe it's better to have figured it out retroactively.
I think so.
Yeah,
I
as
think
opposed
so.
To talk like because I've heard other black people I've talked to that sense of constant awareness of otherness. Because of that.
Oh, yeah.
Was not the first place you went. It was just that I'm unlikable.
Yes. But if you're, I guess, yeah. it's, there's a part of me that never grew, I think. you know, as a result of that.
That you, right, because you were sort of living in a lie to a degree.
I never...
Stunted.
I don't think I ever truly... I was never there. I was always... I didn't have a sense of myself at all. It was just, am I allowed to be in this room now? Or I didn't know who I was. I was just, it's like I was nothing.
Did it having a white father complicate things in the sense that like maybe you didn't see yourself completely as identity wise?
No, he validated me as part of the community.
Right.
It's my dad.
Okay.
So if people don't like me, it's because I'm unlikable.
But it sounds like what you're saying is that your identity wasn't tied into blackness.
No.
So, but outside of that,
who
you
are
weren't
you?
Sure who you were.
Well, because I didn't have many friends.
Yeah,
babe.
No, I get
it.
Yeah,
I didn't
yeah.
like.
So what changed?
God. Well, I suppose what I was always doing was feeding my mind with literature and you know, and you read a book and unless it's specifically spelt out like this person is black, blah, blah, blah.
Right. Yeah.
But so I was learning about the inner workings of all of us through novels and but then I became an actress and I was more comfortable in the roles I was playing. I felt free, I felt relaxed.
Which like when you're reading and stuff, which stuff really kind of like put things into perspective for you the most?
Oh, the big sweeping dramas, Madame Bovary.
Oh yeah.
Just I guess English literature.
Yeah, yeah, sure, yeah.
Sweeping stories of romance. My favorite book was Mill on the Floss, George Eliot.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's actually stories of women who aren't understood and who who just fight for a sense of value and worth in themselves.
Uh-huh.
I really felt a kinship
sure.
with that stuff.
So when you went to the dance school, how long did you stay there?
Till I was 18.
So you were there a couple years?
No, I was there from 12 to 18.
So okay, so that was a long time.
Yeah. When I got my full education, then I went to university and read anthropology, and that's what turned things
no
around.
No kidding.
Man.
So, chose that you decided dance was not your future.
I had an injury and I couldn't do it anymore.
Oh no shit!
When I was 16, and I thought, fuck, what am I going to do? Mm. You know, I dancing was everything.
Yeah.
I also felt really good when I was doing it. You know, because everything, all the other shit disappeared, and. And then this audition for a movie came along because our school was well known. You could either like study drama, you could study music, you could study. And even though I wasn't a drama student, I was the only black girl in the school again.
Yeah.
So they were like, well, they want an African looking girl. So just go along for the day.
Yeah. It's your lucky day, black girl.
Lucky day. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Kind of.
Today's your big day.
Big day. Go and pretend to be a drama student. And because I guess I probably felt a bit like you do as an actor. It's like, am I really an actor?
Well, yeah.
You know? You just sort of.
But you really had not prepared for it.
No. And I didn't care. And I think it was that, like, because it didn't matter if I got it or not.
Uh-huh.
The good thing had already happened, which is I had a free trip to London.
That's great.
Went to a fancy hotel to meet this director.
Okay.
And I took a little bit of direction, and he said, because I did it really badly, because I didn't know what acting was. I assumed you had to just...
It was for a movie?
Yeah, it was for a movie. Hmm. And I assumed you had to sort of speak like this.
Sure,
and he was just flabbergasted by how shit it was.
Uh-huh.
And then he gave me a bit of direction, which was basically, you know, just convince me that everything you're saying is occurring to you just in this moment.
Oh.
And I said, oh, you want me to lie?
Yeah.
And... He went away for a few minutes, let me prepare, came back, and it was a whole new deal because, my God, I could lie well.
Yeah.
Because I'd kind of had to. I'd had to for a long time.
For why? Why
well, when I was
that?
A kid, it's like, are you feeling comfortable in this situation? Totally, yes. Not at all.
Oh, right.
You know.
Right. Also, when you're a troublemaker, you got to lie at first.
A lot. Yeah.
I didn't do it.
So that was that. That was that.
But that's sort of what it is, isn't it? I said that once before where it's like, if you've ever had to lie... To save your ass, and you pulled it off. You're probably an okay actor.
I think, yeah, definitely. In fact,
yeah. If you had to lie to get away with some shit,
but it's like you're winning the game. You know, if you can convince someone of something, it's fun. It's a game. It's just like being a kid.
Well, I don't like, it's like, I understand some people get off on that, and there are people that do. I've always been impressed with people that do broader characters or really immerse themselves characters to sort of fuck with people. I've never had the sort of heart for that. I can't do that. I don't like doing that to people.
No, well, I guess you've come at it, you've only been acting, you know, a decade.
Sure, not yet.
You know, yeah. I really love that. I love it. I played Condoleezza Rice once.
I know, I saw that in W. You're
yeah.
Great. So, did you get the part?
Oh, yes, I did.
Oh.
It was a movie called Flirting. It was in Australia with...
I remember that movie. That was a big movie.
Nicole Kidman. And
yes, that was like her big movie too when she was a kid.
Well, no,
right?
Nicole Kidman was a big star already.
Was she?
Well, she was a big star in Australia.
Right.
And Naomi Watts. But yeah.
Yeah.
It was a big deal.
That's a big deal.
It was a big deal. But it could have been just an episode of a TV show. I was thrilled to be there. So excited.
Where does Anthropology come in?
I went to Cambridge to study anthropology after I finished that movie. Oh, because I've got an African mother, okay?
Oh, so she wasn't.
So for her, education is like, education will save you from certain death, right?
Gotta go.
And so there I made this film, which was a big sidestep from the dancing, which my parents had
sacrificed for that. But it's a celebrated movie, right? I mean,
it was good.
Well, yeah.
It did good. But in the meantime, I wasn't going to dance. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a dancer. That wasn't going to happen because of my injury. So yeah. I just while I was sort of trying to figure out what I was going to do next, I went back to school, got my A levels, and then applied for Cambridge. And I got in.
It's a big deal, Cambridge.
It is a big deal. And so it should be. It's really, really impressive.
Yeah,
and
I
got to study anthropology, which
for 4 years you did?
Three. Hmm. And I still study it.
So why'd you choose that?
Because I knew that I wanted to be an actor. And
really? That was the reason?
Not because of anthropology. I knew what I wanted to do. So
yeah.
I wasn't studying something in order to be something,
like
a doctor
so
or
it was
a
like,
lawyer.
I'm interested in that.
So it's like, what can I do that's just going to expand my mind?
Dig it.
And it sounded really cool.
Yeah.
I also was aware that I was pretty disconnected from my African heritage. And of course, with anthropology, Africa is a huge part of what we study.
Everything comes from there.
It does indeed.
Right.
Mitochondrial Eve.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like a really nice way to spend 3 years while I was figuring out, while I was just getting old enough to be a person.
So
in
you're
the world.
Like 18, 19?
When I went to uni, I was 18. Yeah.
So you had you needed your mind to be blown.
It was blown. Okay. So listen to this.
Yeah.
I go for my meeting for Cambridge,
uh-huh.
and she asks me the question, "How do you determine race? What would be the factor that you would..."
This is in the interview.
This is in my interview.
Yeah.
And I thought for a second and I said, skin color.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, so that's biology then. Yeah. And she said, well, that's interesting because there is more biological difference between a black Kenyan and a black Ugandan than there is between a black Kenyan and a pale-skinned white Swiss person. Because people have been in Africa for so much longer, the gene pool has been changing for so long that there's actually more variation between people with dark skin than there is between a dark-skinned person and a pale-skinned person. So in terms of biology, race is a complete made-up illusion.
Huh.
In terms of black, white, being... you are less different from each other if you are white and black than if you're both black.
Wow, so that's day one. That's the interview.
That was the interview. My mind was like, yeah, it was blown. And because it was so blown, and I'm sitting there and I'm a, in quotes, black person,
yeah.
She's like, you need to come here and you need to learn some stuff and take it out into the world.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, it gave me a sense of place, which is everywhere.
Yeah.
And an ease and a calm. I felt so... it's like it takes you from being on the ground, surrounded by the shit, to a bird's eye view where you can just see the patterns everywhere of why,
right.
of why
yeah,
we,
of a sudden you have
of why we do what we do as
right.
a humanity. And you look at over history, and you know, history with anthropology is talking like 300,000 years.
Sure.
And you just see these patterns humans fall into.
Isn't it nice? Like you get a worldview that you can integrate into your personality.
Kind of.
Yeah.
I accept things way quicker.
Yeah.
As soon as I was
But like if you have a context that works, you know, so, you know, you can, you know, do right for yourself and right for others, you know, and but also see the expanse of it.
Yes.
It's amazing, you know.
Yeah, and I went from feeling like I didn't belong anywhere to I literally belong everywhere.
I am of the world.
And all of us are.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's the message.
It was magical, magical. And then there I was as an actress playing people from all over the world, kind of, you know. Although that's all changed because there's a lot of specificity now. People want to, like, if there's a movie where the lead is trans, you got to be trans. If there's a movie where the person's Brazilian, you got to be Brazilian.
Yes, it makes sense to me.
But people want to see themselves on screen screen is so important.
Right, right. That there's if you're not represented, then there's nothing to reflect for
your importance.
People.
It's like you're not relevant.
Right, and so you're trying to adjust and adapt and become something that you're not because you don't know the other way or how a person like you exists in the world.
Yeah.
Dig it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I guess
you know what it's like. It's like someone sees themselves on the news in the background of a reporter, and they show all their friends for weeks.
Yeah.
Look at me. I was on there because they feel that they're validated.
Yeah, that, I guess that's like one. Yeah, that's I can see that. Right, that's an exciting thing. I'm on TV.
Yeah, so you want
but that's me on TV. Like you got to watch. I was on the news, but to see somebody
who's like you,
with a cultural background,
who's like
or has the same sort of.
You don't want to see yourself being played by someone who isn't you, but who gets to be you because they're more important than you.
Right, and also you'd like to see you represented. Period. I mean, being played is one thing. Yeah, there was a long period of time where there was no representation at all. No one was playing anybody.
No.
Yeah.
It was just one type of person that was allowed to get up there.
I think that not long ago that did I really put that together because of Gina Davis's movie and that movie that she helped produce about the directors in Hollywood and about, she's part of this documentary where she just, realized that, little girls they're only represented in very specific ways when they're younger.
Oh, I don't know.
So how are they going to? Oh, I'll show it to you after. Mm. So how are they going to model themselves? What are they going to model themselves after? How can they have any hope then to be anything other than this small, myopic, these very few choices about modeling themselves when men and little boys have the whole world and girls are like, be a ballerina or, and I.
It's so true.
Well,
isn't
it takes into consideration, the power of the medium and of entertainment and of.
Absolutely.
And how much it dictates our lives. And it's like when you really kind of not that unlike that moment you had when you got Anthropology in your head, there's that moment where you realize, oh, my God. This is a fucking travesty.
Yes. And I could have gone through my whole life thinking that.
Yeah.
Sure. We need to,
got to have your mind blown.
There are really important things to learn.
Right now, specifically because we're up against some real fascistic shit on a global.
Which relies on ignorance.
Sure. And promotes ignorance and promotes misinformation.
Mm.
But, it's a global trend. Whatever progress we've made as humans, it's tentative in the face of that might of ignorance,
Yeah.
So there's a real fight to be fought. Even with the stuff around being woke and around women, I talked to Eve Ensor.
I know, who's a dear, dear friend of mine.
Yeah, I love her.
I'm on the board of V-Day with Eve.
Oh, yeah.
My mind was blown because I met Eve when I was 21.
Oh, wow.
And I saw her performing. She was on a world tour of the Vagina Monologues.
Mm-hmm.
And she was performing at this pub in Islington in London.
Wow.
And I went along. A friend of mine had said,
Were you at Cambridge at the time?
Just finished.
Okay. So you just finished and you were going to go back to acting?
I was still acting. Yeah. That's how I was told about Eve, is that my...
Did you act at Cambridge as well?
Oh, all the way through.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was always on the motorway going up to London to get on a plane to go and make... I made 5 movies when I was at Cambridge. It was nuts.
Okay.
It was nutty.
Okay.
So I met Eve and my life was turned around.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, first of all, just hearing her... on stage, just the experiences of women that she'd obviously met and interviewed, and the taboo nature of everything that she was saying, and how that was opening people up to feeling that they weren't the only ones, you know, who didn't, who were ashamed of their bodies, who'd been sexually abused. And I spoke to her afterwards, and within minutes I was talking about my own sexual abuse. And she was smiling at me and proud of me, and I didn't feel ashamed. And she took shame away from my experience just by encountering me.
Just by listening empathetically.
Just by listening to me and saying, rather than making me feel like a victim, I was a survivor. And I was radiant in that.
And also so very not alone.
So very not alone. And so she and I became friends, and because I was an actress at that point, I was 21. I'd been in a few movies. I was on the rise.
So you did like Jefferson in Paris, Interview with a Vampire, when you were at Cambridge?
Yes.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Playing the Jefferson in Paris, the Sally Hemings character is a hell of a bit of business.
Or... And you know what? At that time, there was no DNA to support the truth of that. That happened after the movie, you know. So we were speculating, but I mean, to go to the house of Thomas Jefferson and be served your lunch by young men who looked exactly like Thomas Jefferson, who were Sally Hemings' children, It's mind-blowing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
America has come a long way.
Yeah, it's come too long to go back.
It's come a long, long way. It's inspiring, really.
So, yeah, when I spoke to Eve, you know, there was a period, you know, that engagement with her. And I was sort of in awe of her to begin with.
The apology is just...
Oh, my God, man.
It's a revelation.
Come on.
It's a whole new way of thinking, a whole new way of claiming your freedom.
It was something else. I just read it on a whim because I get a lot of stuff sent to me. And
you knew.
And I'm like, I got to tell you.
You knew. I'm so glad you guys spoke. Because you encountered her so beautifully. You were so open. But you allowed the book to really challenge you.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously that is, of course, because Eve is so ready to accept a new way of thinking. She's so open, you know.
She's great. And I used to see her around New York. I've always really was... there's certain people in your life that you don't know when it's going to happen or how, but you need to be with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a minute or two.
Yeah. And you had such a great conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's... like, I was emailing her just this morning. I love her, Eve. She's extraordinary. And we do a lot of great work together.
Yeah, she does great work.
Yeah. Which organization? Congo. V-Day.
Right.
So I'm on the board of V-Day. And
Congo's heavy, man.
It is. But my God, to go there and see what, with so little... these people, these women are achieving in their lives.
And they've
come back from the dead, and psychologically and emotionally. They were destroyed by the violence, the sexual violence that they've experienced. And it's rape is a weapon of war.
Mm-hmm.
And to have the realization, because Eve went to Congo. This is the vagina monologues has completely dictated Eve's life.
Mm-hmm.
She's just followed where she, you know, where the call is. And she didn't even want to go to Congo because she knew it was going to just take over and it's the epicenter of the worst that can happen to a woman.
Uh-huh.
It's the worst place in the world to be a woman.
Yeah.
I've read once.
Have you gone?
Yeah. Mm. She asked, she went, and there's an amazing gynecologist called Dr. Mukwege, who won the Nobel Prize 2 years ago, who physically heals women. There are two hospitals in the whole of Congo where if you can get there, they will surgically try and put you back together.
Ugh,
most women don't survive.
Geez.
But
how does this, like, this is like...
It's called the Pansy Hospital.
But
his
this
hospital.
Is ongoing, this assault?
Oh, love.
In terms of what is the social structure around it?
Well, within Congo, Congo's huge and is obviously many neighboring countries.
I know
that
she
are
probably
going,
told me this stuff.
No, I don't. Not when I heard your thing, but and neighboring countries which are going through their own conflict. And Congo's not like the borders aren't well sort of policed.
Yeah.
So you just militias go in from other places. Congo's very rich with resources, so very quickly they can gain enough money to then buy more weapons and leave. But the way they get the money is by mining for minerals. And you go to an area and there's no roads. So you can be hidden in forests. And different militia at any one time, there's, you know, 20 militia, different militia fighting different wars within Congo, rearming to get out. And they use the local people to mine. But in order to do that, you have to sort of, it's kind of slave labor. And the way to control an environment is to abuse the women and have the men unable to help the women and have the children witness all of that happening. And then those male children are taken away and told that what's happened to their family, their mothers and sisters raped and their fathers murdered, the people that did this, we're going to go get them. And then they're trained up to be boy soldiers. And this is systematic. And it works. And it's free. You know, you don't, you can destroy an entire community and you don't even need any, you don't need finances to do it. You just... So when Eve went to Congo and met Dr. Mukwege, who has, you know... surgically managed to heal many, many, many women. She said, what do we do? What can I help? How can I help? And he said, well, women, I can physically heal women, but it's their minds and their hearts and their spirits that I can't. So that's why she developed with women in Congo, with survivors from PANSY. She said, what are we going to do?
It's called PANSY?
PANSY Hospital is where Dr. Mukwege works. And so they said, we need a safe space where we can be together and not feel ashamed and get strong enough so we can go back to our communities who have rejected us and be proud and survive. So within, it's called the City of Joy, named by the women themselves. That's what they wanted it to be called. And it teaches them self-defense, how to use a computer, how to have a bank account, group therapy, all the things that are going to give you the mental and emotional confidence to be a leader. And we've had now 6 years of graduates, because you can be there for 6 months and you have to have leadership potential to go there. That's the other thing.
Wow.
But within 6 months, these women have left. There's a documentary about it on Netflix called City of Joy, which charts the growth of the, of, well, for, about Dr. Mukwege, his meeting with Eve, and it charts the 9 years to the City of Joy, and it's flourishing. It's amazing, and it is. We need Congo. All 40% of minerals that are used in electronics goods come from there, and that's what these different militia are using as you know to sell to get money for their arms.
Yeah.
So it is a system which has been in place for over 15 years, and it's not known by most people. So that's where I go.
Yeah.
On my time off.
You do?
Yeah, get to the City of Joy, hang out with my friends, just to sit down and say to a woman who has been devastated by sexual violence, to say, I was sexually abused too. They can't believe it. You were sexually abused, but you're from over there.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, power is this, you know, the corruption of and power is the same everywhere.
Yeah.
And just to for them to feel like there's someone from over there.
Sure, that it's a global thing.
Yeah, and that's going to maybe try and help.
Right.
But what I get back to is, what happened to me, Mark, is nothing. I don't give a shit. It helped me be here now.
Yeah.
And I would not have met Eve. I would not have helped these women that I know, Jane and all, Christine and all of them.
Sure, right. It changed the way you saw yourself and the world.
I have a purpose, which is so much bigger than anything I could ever have imagined.
Because of trauma.
Because of my trauma.
What happened?
I was... and the reason I pause is because...
You don't have to tell me. You,
no, it's not because... It's because it's prehistory.
Sure.
Because it... I don't give a fuck about that person.
Yeah.
And
the person. Oh, the person.
I don't give a fuck about them. I was a virgin, and I was. It was statutory rape. The director that I was working with, well, that had hired me when I was 16, and I.
Not the guy who directed Flirting.
Yes.
Oh.
But and it was a bleak time. Those 10 years, I was robbed of a lot.
But again, in talking about even when you were younger around being different, how long did it take you to frame it properly?
Oh my goodness.
I mean, like what?
Because I was the perfect victim, love. I was I had such low self-esteem. I had no sense of self. I absolutely bowed down to authority completely because it gave me permission to just be.
And also you wanted to be part of this thing.
Yeah. I mean, also it was a movie. That's like fantasy land.
So was it a negotiation?
What do you mean?
Did he ask you to do something to be in the movie?
No. I was happily doing the movie. My dad, it was in Australia. My dad was with me, bless his heart, as my chaperone. Mm-hmm. My dad got super bored because I was having a nice time. Yeah. I was 16, like, whoa, this is amazing.
Yeah, you're in a movie.
And after a month, my dad just thought I was having a great time. I was a teenager. Yeah. And he said, look, I'm going to head back home. You're clearly okay. And he actually got the director promised that, well, to my dad, I found out later that he would take care of me. Uh-huh. And he said, you know, I'll look after Tandy. I'll take her out for dinner the night you leave to make her feel. And that was that was the night.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck, man.
Yeah, pretty rough. And went on for a long time.
Past the shooting of the movie?
Oh, yeah. Huh. Because it was a mind control, too. Because I'd never had sex.
Yeah.
And
it's a mind fucker.
It was like, this is what it is.
Yeah. Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And even if I felt uncomfortable, which I really did, and afraid, which I really did, I thought that's what you did feel when... I thought that's what...
Yeah, that's the way it was supposed to be.
Yeah, to be afraid to feel a bit uncomfortable. You know, it's so taboo. No one fucking talks about it. Mm. So, okay, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. And it was when I was... As time went on, I was feeling more and more... It was clearly not pleasure, and the fact that it was secret too. I was asked to keep it a secret.
Really, for the whole time?
Yeah, well, for 2 years certainly. And then I started. I was very unwell. Mm. I had a terrible eating disorder. I had a lot of shame, and I didn't really understand why. I just knew I was killing myself. There was something. And I left that situation. Like I said, this has to stop because I was having really bad physical, like, symptoms after.
Around the food and stuff?
Yeah, but just, like, the feeling of my, it was just, I wanted my body to disappear. I just felt gross. But I couldn't blame that person. I had to blame myself for that feeling. It's like I didn't even know why I was doing anything. It was just like instruction, do it. Instruction, do it. And I came from it was a movie. I was in a fucking school uniform in that movie. I played a schoolgirl. It's like you do what your teacher tells you. I mean, I can't.
But also, you had it was sort of from when you were younger too. You had this kind of who am I? You know, thing that,
and also very powerful figure.
Yeah.
And I was getting the attention.
Yeah.
That's a lot. I had powerful figures that were just fucking couldn't wait to get rid of me. As a child.
Pain in the ass, yeah.
Well, because I was black, pain in the ass.
But you think the eating disorder definitely manifested from that trauma.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, physically, the shame. Just wanting to just like literally
disappear.
And get my, just get to vomit out the feeling, the shame. And so I went to a therapist. I actually called my girlfriend I told you about, who I met when I was a child.
Sure, yeah.
Jessica. I called her one night and I thought I was going to die. My heart was beating so hard in my chest and I was so thin and I was so scared. And I called and I said, I'm frightened and this is what's been happening. And so I went to a therapist for the first time. And within minutes, this therapist had connected my shame and eating to being sexually abused. And I just didn't have the knowledge. And it, of course, the following day I stopped hurting myself physically.
Really?
The following day.
Because you're very open to having your mind blown, and it did.
It did.
And you're like,
of course.
It
was just an explanation.
Right.
It was an explanation. So, yeah. And then I, you know, got my life back. A lot over over time, it damaged my family horribly, this whole experience, because my dad left that day.
Oh, man. So he felt responsible.
Oh, shit. And my mum hadn't been there. Oh. And the reason my mum hadn't been there is because she thought no one would take her seriously, because there's a lot of internalized racism, my poor mother. Mm. You know, you don't grow up in colonial Africa, you know, without thinking that you really are nothing.
Even if you're a princess.
Oh, well, because the colonialists disbanded all the royal lineages.
Yeah.
They stopped people from being able to even mention them.
Yeah.
You were no longer a queen. You were no longer a princess.
They did the same things those Congolese rapists did,
yes.
Only mentally.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
That's the way it works.
It's a thorny, thorny...
And also what this guy did to you on some level.
And you know what else, Mark? What I've also realized more recently is, and I was reminded by it when I was watching the R. Kelly, the documentary about the girls. They kept repeatedly saying, we're black girls, no one's going to listen to us anyway.
Mm.
And there was an element of that in that no one was going to listen to me.
Yeah.
I was the perfect victim. Like, well, not only am I a little girl, I'm black, and like it's the kind of hyper-sexualized objectification of the black girl.
Yeah.
But also it's the, and I can do what I want to you and no one's going to ever know about it because no one's going to listen to you anyway.
Yeah.
And how times have changed.
Right. And what did, now you were, but this happened long before what's going on now.
Oh yeah, but I talked about it a lot.
Early on.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. As soon as I went to therapy, yeah. I came out like, right, this cannot happen to another little girl.
Publicly.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I could see it happening everywhere. And it was also happening to me, not as badly, but because I would, as soon as I got a whiff of it, I'm like,
yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
I had like casting couch bullshit and I would call it out and other actresses would. Unfortunately, I was ostracized not only by the people preying on young women,
because
I was obviously not someone who was going to, you know, roll over.
Right.
But also people who just kind of like went along with things just because that's how you get ahead. So don't rock the boat. So they also wanted to sort of not be associated with me too. I had a publicist, a very well-known publicist who represented me at the time, who called me up one day and said, Tan, you got to stop talking about this stuff because it's just not good for your reputation.
Systemic.
Well, because it wasn't good for my reputation. It really wasn't to be the one going, this industry is disgusting. This is what happened. This happened to me. So look out, people.
But you were ahead of it.
Yeah.
And do you feel that it did have a direct impact on what your career could have been? Or
yeah, for sure. I remember not wanting to do a movie because the director said to me, the first shot is going to be this tight close-up. It's going to look like a deep blue road, right, with like the yellow stripes going down the road, you know, in the mid. And we're going to pull back and realize that it's the denim of your jeans and the stitching so tight on your ass.
Yeah.
And it was a massive movie. And I'm like, nope. Yeah. And literally that movie would have turned me into a major star. I remember it.
Yeah,
I was like, I just can't work with that. That's horrible. And it was not with any kind of like pride. It was just fear. Like, I just can't.
And also, you know, the realization that you reclaimed yourself. So why would you give that up?
I couldn't. I literally couldn't.
Right.
It would be like vomiting again.
Right. Right.
Couldn't do it. Can't go back there.
Not worth living with that.
Well, because I knew that it was life or death.
Hmm.
Life or death to be
really
back. Well, to be back in an environment,
to be back in the shame,
life or death.
And when did you turn a corner around, you know, being regrounded in your career? You know,
my career was always like, what would happen then, of course, is that I would find myself working with people who weren't like that.
Right.
So even though
there's plenty of them,
and even though I may not have been earning as much as I could have been,
yeah,
I was working on kind of cool stuff,
yeah,
which didn't like make me rocket to that place, which
right.
Unfortunately, and I felt terrible about that, by the way, that I said no to a project that would have, my manager and my agent were both shouting at me saying, I can't say.
Why can't?
Well, because I just
can't.
You
didn't even say that anything bad about that guy, really, other than he wanted to shoot a picture of your ass.
But people worked hard on it, you know.
Was it a big movie?
Mm. Yeah. And Yeah, so I chipped away, but I actually think that in the long run, it's better to just cruise along on good stuff than to have the highs, because you can crash so far from
and
those
also,
high
places. And also, you
know,
who the hell knows? You could have become a monster.
Yes.
Right?
Well, I would have. I could have become a stupid, self-absorbed, unempathic person.
Right. It just seems like, you know, whatever the trajectory of your life has been, that you know, sort of, you met the right man, you got a beautiful family, you work all the time, you don't have the pressure of being some sort of strange, you know, movie star, which is not great.
No.
No, you know, you're better.
I get to have a real life.
Yeah.
And I get to help people that I really, well, everybody's deserving of help. And I get to do that with quite a few people.
And in an honest way, not as a way.
Oh, no. It's not like an accessory.
Or just sort of like, I've got to do something
to make myself feel better.
Right.
No. It's none of that. It saved my life. Saved my life.
That's a beautiful thing.
And I've got these two daughters who are dope. They are so, they don't even realize it, because it's just been this invisible nurturing and invisible information.
How old are they?
19 and 15.
So how did you deal with the, you know, some of the conversations that you would have liked to have had with your parents that didn't happen with them?
I had the conversations.
Oh, you did?
I talk about what happened. They've seen me give talks. They've not read interviews, but I'm very open about it. I'm not ashamed of what happened, because it's not my shame.
On all levels. You mean, you know, your childhood experience and the sexual abuse?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. And
did you do a talk?
I did a TED talk, actually.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Not about sexual abuse, but about, I guess, the being on the other side of racial hatred, I guess. Mm. And my daughter, my 15-year-old is an actress now. I mean, it's so not what I kind of...
Yeah.
It wasn't like, I didn't create any opportunities for her, quite the opposite.
Yeah.
But it's happened. And to see her on set, to see her in a photo shoot, to see her be so gracious and yet have absolute self-awareness.
Uh-huh.
And to, you know, it's not like she's afraid because mummy's like talked about these monsters that are out there, because I've actually humanized the people that have done what they've done, you know, because nothing happens.
Because they are human?
Well, and also because trauma begets trauma begets trauma unless you interrupt that cycle, you know, and the girls are, their eyes are wide open. They're kind, but they question authority at every turn.
Yeah.
That's a big one for me.
Yeah.
Is to, you know, to make sure that you have given permission for that authority to be in place.
And you provided them the ability to develop a sense of self.
Oh, utterly.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm proud.
You've broken the pattern.
Yeah, and I thank my mother for that too, because she did the absolute best. Oh, she did so great. She did the best that she could. And my dad too, you know?
I think it's very interesting that kind of, because even like from what I understand about the character that you do now, even in Westworld, that you have a robot who is realizing her situation and pushes back against her programming.
It's basically my story.
Yeah, and your mother's story.
Babe, that first season was everything. I had no idea that I was so well equipped to play that experience. It was like the perfect metaphor for, I mean, look, it could be the perfect metaphor for a lot of people, not just women.
Right.
You know, but to inhabit that, it's like it gave me complete closure.
It
sealed off.
No kidding. So the experience of
playing
immersing
that
yourself
character,
in that.
Because it was a beginning, a middle, and an end. She went from creating the trauma. You know, she was the madam of the saloon, getting these girls to be raped and, you know, gross. And then to have the awareness. And then to educate herself in order to break free. Not just from the park, but to free herself from her ideas about herself and others and morality and so on.
Mm.
And then to say no. And to then the second season is I Would Rather Die, which is that Crash moment too.
Sure.
The movie. I would rather
and,
die.
Oh, you're in Crash.
Yeah,
with, Matt Dillon.
Yeah, I would rather die than have you dominate me in any way, even to save my life.
I guess, like, the question, like, in terms of talking about humanizing monsters,
yes,
is that
yes,
you know, is that moment where he, because it can be viewed as him not changing at all and actually again being in a position of power,
mm-hmm.
or you know, as a policeman doing his. The duty of helping somebody in this particular situation, even though he violated you in another situation. Like, it's a complicated bit of business.
It is. And I think ultimately what the story is saying and is trying to portray is that even someone who does something awful can be redeemable if they truly understand the nature of what they've done, which is Eve's book, The Apology. Right?
But that guy never really did.
No, he died.
Right. She had to create that guy from her own heart. That book is insane.
It's insane. It is insane. But you know what? We can heal ourselves. We don't have to hurt the person that's hurt us.
That's right. And we don't have to continue the pattern.
No, we don't. And that's really incredibly sophisticated, you know? And so we have these brains. We're not simple mammals, you know.
No, we're not monkeys or dogs.
No, we can
make
love
choices.
Them, as love them as we do.
Yes, but we can make
we
choices.
We can, and so it's on us to go further with making things better.
Thank you for talking to me.
It's been amazing talking to you.
You like the
thank
coffee?
Thank you. Yeah, I finished it.
Oh, good. All right, so... Now, when I turn the mics off, you're going to tell me the name of the movie.
Okay.
But I'm so glad you came.
Thank you, Mark. I'm glad I came too.
Candy Newton, the lovely, charming, smart, engaged Candy Newton. The new season of Westworld is on HBO Sunday nights and on HBO streaming platforms. My special, End Times Fun, is on Netflix globally, streaming around the world. Okay? All right. I will now play my dirty old guitar, my 1960 Les Paul Jr. through a 1953 Fender Deluxe amp through a MXR Echoplex, which is a updated version of the original that doesn't use analog tape. This is a meditation, almost Spaceman 3 type meditation in two chords. Boomer lives.